Hi, my name is Jerry Shalacy. I am 44 years old. Today is March 15th, 2023. We are currently at Gift of Hope in Itasca, Illinois, and I am with Amy Johnson Bax, my colleague.
My name is Amy. I am 60, and today is March 15, 2023. We are at the Gift of Hope office in Itasca, Illinois, and my partner is Jerry, as he just introduced himself, and we are colleagues, and I'm in his fan club as well. So that's another relationship that we have. So, Jerry, I looked at some of the sample questions, and one thing that I was really looking forward to was getting to know you better. We've worked together for a really long time. I know a little bit about your family and your boys, and, you know, and as we were getting ready here, I learned you're first generation American, which is really fascinating to me. I'm a couple generations out. So tell me how that like colored your early years. Like, did you feel like you were a first? Like, what was that like for you?
Yeah, I mean, I never felt like I was truly a first generation, even though I was. My dad immigrated in here, I think when he was 8 or 9, 10 years old, when he was young. Family has always been very important to us, so I think we have that Sicilian-Italian background of family means everything. Even to this day, every Sunday, we go over to my parents' house with my aunts and uncles, and we have the traditional, you know, family dinners and that. Family has certainly been an important part growing up, without a doubt. It means everything to us.
I married into an Italian family, and I'm Northern European myself, Scandinavian, and it was a little overwhelming, certainly initially, and I have learned and now really appreciate the closeness. I'm honestly very close with my siblings, but with the Italians, it's you have to kiss everyone hello, and you have to kiss everyone goodbye, and initially, that was oh my gosh, this is a lot. And now I love it. I really have come to appreciate that. The way some of them talk to each other is disconcerting for me once in a while. And my sister-in-law had to she wrote a sternly worded letter to her siblings about their mom one time, and she told me later, as I was writing, I thought, oh, Amy's going to hate me. She's going to be so mad. And it wasn't even addressed to me, but... Because they speak more freely than I am used to.
With passion.
Oh my gosh,
we're always
told
we speak with passion.
Yeah, everything. But with no bad intent behind it. Right. You know, it's what's the matter with you?
Right, exactly.
And someone saying that to me is, oh my gosh.
I don't know what's wrong with me.
You know, yeah. And it's just been funny to learn that.
Yeah.
And it took me a while to get used to that and recognizing no bad feelings behind it. They love each other fiercely, and they just a lot of emoting, I guess, is
for sure
is a good
no doubt
it. Yeah,
and like I know I was very close to my grandma, my dad's mom. She was the nucleus of this entire family. And she passed 6 months before I met my wife, and of course, we always talked about my grandma and how great she was, but she was a Sicilian old woman. Like, she had her ways, and that was it. And she always asked, she goes, I always wondered if your grandma would like me. Like, I was always wondering if that would be a thing. Like, I promise you, because I was the golden child. Like, I was the first boy, like, with all my with all my cousins and that. Like, I was the oldest with all of our
family. Oh, with all the broader family, even you were the very first.
Okay. So, like, I was the golden child, and, you know, I was always kind of held on this level that my grandma thought like I could do no wrong. But of course that came with the strife of, is this the right person that could be marrying my grandson and everything?
Oh my gosh, that would be a lot of,
it's funny.
Yeah, that is funny.
No, well.
So when you were little, what did you dream you would be?
So I always wanted to be a firefighter. My fourth grade teacher, Mr. Seaborn, was a volunteer fireman. And I remember, when I was in class with him, his pager would go off, and he would leave, go to a fire, and a substitute would come in. And, like, that's what it was. And I was like, I don't know what this guy is doing. Wow. Like, I knew he was a fireman, but yeah. he would come back from class and, you know, he would smell of smoke and everything else. I'm like, this is really cool stuff. So I always had that that vision of becoming a fireman when I grew up, just I think like every boy. But I really took it seriously. So I remember my eighth grade career report. I did it on being a firefighter and a paramedic. And luckily, when I turned 21, I was able to get on the fire, the same fire department that my fourth grade Mr. Seaborn was on.
That's neat.
And even like when we would do like our annual Christmas parties and things like that, I would still see Mr. Seaborn out there. And he's like, please call me Dickie. Like, that was his first name. Dickie. I'm like, okay, Mr. Seaborn.
Right,
like,
you will
always
way.
Be my fourth grade teacher. It's still going to be in there.
Of course, that's funny.
But it's really, it's something I was always passionate about of wanting to help out people. And and I think that's kind of what got me into Gift of Hope, was just kind of getting into that love of things.
Yeah. I'm always impressed by someone who knew from a really young age what they wanted to do and made it happen.
Right, right.
When I was a kid, I wanted to be a receptionist. And I did it.
Yeah. Even when you were younger.
Yes, when I was little, I thought that for some reason it just really held glamour for me. It's like, oh, wouldn't that be neat?
Yeah.
I just sit at this desk and get to greet everybody when they come in. You know, I was probably 7 or 8.
Yeah.
And I was a receptionist for many years. And to be honest, I loved it.
Yeah.
I really did love it. I did retail for a while and have always said if it paid, I would do that too. I love that connection. Mm-hmm. I tend to be pretty reserved, so I'm not going to go too deep with someone I've just met, but making you feel at home and comfortable and you belong here, like that means a lot to me, and I love getting to do that.
And when I think of like people. Some of your adjectives, Amy, it's supportive 100%. So I can see like you're automatically just naturally into that. Into that mode of just always being supportive.
Yeah, that's really, I appreciate that.
Yeah.
I think I told you my dad passed away a couple months ago, and this last weekend was his memorial service. And one thing that I shared was when I was a teenager, when I was 15, I'm one of five kids and I'm in the middle, and we're all really close in age. And when I was 15, for Christmas, we got gifts as usual, but my dad wrote each of us a letter, talking to us as people, right? And what he said to me was, I see that you have a servant's heart and that God has made you that way. And I mean, clearly that has stuck with me forever. Yeah. And how lovely that my dad would do that for me. You know, that was really a gift. And I felt not just that it was nice, but it was like a word over my life, sort of. You know, it was really profound. And I married someone who has a similar
same
bent.
Thing.
Yeah, he sees, you know, driving along, he'll see somebody struggling with, you know, carrying something, and he just pulls over.
Yeah.
He just is a servant. Yeah. Which I love about him, and it's probably one reason we get along really well.
And I think that there's a lot of similarities when you have that intrinsic belief in always wanting to help.
Mm-hmm.
Even though, you know, again, like my wife does insurance. She's not in the healthcare field, although she grew up in it. Like, I met my wife through her sister, who was a nurse at the hospital
that
I worked at.
Oh, fun. Okay.
But she always grew up in that healthcare field, although she hates the thought of doing any healthcare related stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But she naturally is a helper. Like, she's
That's
always there
bent.
To help out other mm-hmm. people. And anytime someone's struggling, she is the first one that's going to be in line. So I think there's
That's
a
lovely.
Lot of similarities when you have that sort of partnership of, mm-hmm. of naturally wanting to help out.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm grateful for that. And it doesn't surprise me at all that you say that that's true about your wife.
Mm-hmm.
Because you would have a partner like that, because that's your bent as well, right?
It's a major part.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think that's lovely.
So how long have you been at Gift of Hope, Amy?
January was 26 years for me.
There's been a lot of change.
There has been a lot of change. And I've thought both sides. When I came here, John and I were dating. And just crazy to think of how much of my life I've lived while I have worked here, right? And yeah, oh my gosh, it's totally different now than when I stepped in the door. And I came as a temp.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I covered for Jennifer Mascarella when she was on maternity leave for her son, who's, you know, he's got to be 25. Yeah. He's in the service. So I covered, my very first role here was working for Bob Benway. I'm sure he was gone by the time you came, because he wasn't here very long after I started. And Jack Lynch.
Okay.
So I was their secretary, and Jack had never had anyone supporting him before. And he had me doing stuff, like, inside of 2 weeks. It was, I don't think I'm getting paid for this. Oh, my gosh. I actually was running a meeting with outside guests that he couldn't come to.
Right.
And seriously, that was at the end of my second week. So I actually called the temp agency and said, you know, I think I need more money for what's going on here. Oh, my gosh. And both sides agreed, and I did get a little more cash. But it was a few months that I worked for Jack. And there are always jokes about it, and I talk playfully about it. We were really good partners because he's a visionary. Mm-hmm. I'm not the visionary, but I can put feet under anything.
Yeah.
Right. So, and I was strong enough. So he wasn't going to leave the building unless he gave me that signature I needed. Right. So we really worked very well together. He was out in the community doing his stuff, and I was, no, sit down. You got 10 minutes and I need this from you. And We were very good partners.
Did you know anything about, I mean, then it was Roby, but did you know anything about Gift of Hope?
Nothing.
When you came in?
Nothing.
Did you have any idea that this would be your career path?
Oh, my gosh, no.
No,
definitely no. I was in commodities before.
Okay.
And that's actually how I met my husband. We both worked in commodities, and I was in commodities for, I don't know, 7 or 8 years. Never would have dreamed that this is where I would be. Yeah. Yeah, never would have dreamed. And they gifted, well, Roby then actually created a position to keep me, which was pretty cool.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah, it was Mary Rosenberg.
Yeah,
I was, my stint was ending as a temp, and she said, so what can we do to make you stay?
Keep you around for a little while.
Yeah, which was really nice.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
26 years later.
Yep. So 26 is my on the books time, because I was here 8 or 9 months as a temp before that.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
That's incredible. Yeah, there's certainly, there's been some changes. There's
oh
been
my
some
gosh.
Changes with it. I mean, just, you know, not only in the building and the four walls, but just in the growth of the number of people and what we're servicing and all the things we're doing with it. It's pretty remarkable.
We were just at about 100 employees when I started, and now we're at 370, something like that, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty crazy.
It is pretty crazy.
When I started here, again, last year was, this is my 16th year now, but I started in the allocation department. And I knew when I was going through my paramedic rotation, I was in the ICU, and I had to do so many hours of clinical time.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, they were doing all the organ placement in the ICU. The organ recovery coordinator was doing all the
placement.
Oh,
right, before we had, like, a department here.
So, like, the coordinator would call UNOS, and they would fax over the list of all the people. And I worked at the hospital at that time that I was in, and as a paramedic in the ICU, there really wasn't too much stuff we can learn. Like, we stared at the heart monitors, and, like, we got that, but we didn't get that much about, you know, medications and drugs and vent settings and all that.
Yeah.
So the nurse manager, who was my boss, she's like, hey, Jer, there's a Roby case going on the other unit. Maybe you can do something like that. And I knew nothing about organ donation. Like, I knew at that time, you'd sign the back of your license, tell your family you wanted to be an organ donor, and that was it.
That was it, yeah.
So I was like, all right, I'll go over there and see what this is all about. So I was shadowing. I'm sure it was Jeff or, like, someone that's still here. But he had the list in front of him, and he would do some changes on the ventilator or change some medications. Then he'd run over to the ICU phone. make some phone calls, see if anyone was interested in the organ, run back over. And I was watching this person going back and forth. And I was like, what is going on? Yeah. Like, this is the craziest stuff. And at that time, me and Audra were engaged. We were planning our wedding. And I remember it being a Saturday because we had to do a cake testing that afternoon. And I had to do like 2 hours or 3 hours of clinical time.
Okay.
And I called Audra and I said, hey, I'm here. I don't know when I'm going to be home, but I need to hang around this. This is really interesting. And the coordinator was able to, or he invited me to go into the operating room for the organ recovery. He's like, if you want, I can get you in here and you can do some observation. I was like, absolutely. Yeah. I have no idea what this is, but it seems like something interesting. Mm-hmm. And I was able to get into the OR, and I remember standing by the head of the anesthesiologist. And I was looking over the drape, and I'm watching this coordinated effort of these organs being recovered for transplant. And I said, at that time, I wanted to be a fireman. Like, I was going through my paramedic classes. Yep. I had every intention of doing career firefighting, getting my 20 years, getting a nice Illinois pension, getting a cabin somewhere up in Wisconsin, and living the rest of my life.
Yeah.
And I remember it like it was yesterday. I was standing by the anesthesiologist, and I'm watching all this stuff, and I was like, I need to take a hard right turn. Like, there is just something ticking inside of me that said, I need to be a part of this.
Is your
like,
path.
I wanted to help people.
Yeah.
And I knew as a firefighter and a paramedic, there's stuff I could do to help people, certainly. Mm-hmm. But there was like a completely different calling of this. So, you know, I applied, and I didn't hear anything. And I finally got a call from Human Resources, and they said, we have a position in the Donor Resource Center. I'm like, I don't know what that is, but they explained it, and they said, you know, it's taking the phone calls and doing authorizations. And at that time, I was constantly like, I needed to be in it. And it didn't seem like it was something that was going to fit me for where I was at. So I turned it down.
You did?
They're like, we'll keep your, you know, we'll keep your resume on file and we'll see. And it was crickets.
Yeah.
It took months. And I was like, I should have taken it. I regret taking
it.
And then out of the blue, I get a call from HR saying we have an opening for an allocation coordinator.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I don't know what that is, but I'll take it. And I met with Ron Skolick and interviewed with him.
Yeah.
And he hired me in. And at that time, we had a team of 8 people with our allocation and our kidney perfusion coordinators. And now I like look back at that 15 years later, and now we're budgeting at our department. We're going to be at 34 people.
Oh my gosh.
I look at, you know, where we started 15 years ago, but not that long ago.
That's not that long.
To where we are now. And it's like, it is unbelievable
the
amount of change that I've seen in the short period of time that I've been here. So
yeah, that's not that long.
No, no.
No, it really isn't.
No.
So let's talk highlights. Tell me some favorite moments over the last 15 years.
I'll tell you. I mean, the people in the department that I work in, some of the allocation coordinators, and you talked about it, you've been at Gift of Hope for a while. It's a second family, you know.
Yeah.
Your kids grow up together. People get married. You kind of share these life milestones of the people that you're in there. So, you know, I've gone to coworkers' parents' funerals.
Yeah.
I've gone to weddings and celebrations. We just had one of our allocation coordinators, Jacina. She became a grandma just 2 days ago.
Oh, was the baby born?
Yeah.
I haven't seen her. Okay,
so
okay,
adorable.
Good.
So adorable. He's so adorable.
Yeah, I bet.
So she was sending pictures around. So, you know, when I think about the highlight reels, it's certainly, for me, the people, the people that work here.
Yeah.
You know, the great things of organs going for transplant and advocating for all that, that is absolutely a great thing.
Yeah.
These things that we see every day. And it's just amazing.
Yeah.
It's just amazing.
Yeah.
How about you?
So rather than highlights, I'm impressed that I'm still amazed at what we do. Right. And from it's all of it. So it's that our bodies can take somebody else's lungs and work.
Yeah.
Is stunning to me. There's a verse in the Bible that says, we are fearfully and wonderfully made. Mm-hmm. And I think about that all the time, that we can swap parts and function. And that someone is brave enough to accept a kidney from another person's body, that someone is brave enough to say, yeah, it's my husband, but you can take what's going to help someone else.
Yeah.
That is just amazing to me. I will share one highlight. So a number of years ago, Allosource came in to talk about uses for tissue. And I was running late, slipped in at the last because I had a meeting to go along. So I was just sitting in the back. And they talked about, I'm not going to remember what the stuff is called, but it's a putty of some sort that they make from decellularized bone, mm-hmm. I think, that's ground up. And they make this putty and put it into where there's a deficit and your body grows the bone into that space, right? How can that be true? And they showed a couple of case studies. There was a woman who had been in an accident and lost 3 ribs. So they rolled up a few hot dogs of this stuff, put it in there, and an x-ray a year later doesn't show any, like her own bone grew in and filled it in. Somebody else in an accident lost all of their teeth and had a lot of bone loss. They open up the gums, they pack this stuff in, and their own bone grows and fills it in. That's amazing to me.
Yeah.
And it was kind of funny in the room, like I'm getting all excited and kind of would say, do you hear this, people? do you hear what's going on here? Right? And we talk about tissue is enhancing, right? That's what our mission says. Right. It's really healing and life-changing. Yeah. I mean, that sort of stuff happening. And they asked for questions, and I said, yeah, I've got a question. How does it know when to stop?
Mm.
And it was Rebecca at the time, and she said, we actually don't know. Like, your body just knows to be done, and this is the amount of bone we need here, so it just finishes. That is stunning
to
me. And so exciting, right? I love that. I love the science behind it. I love that our bodies do that. And I love that I get to be a part of that.
Yeah.
That's really amazing.
And just to see the advances, you know, in the time since I've been here, mm-hmm. of, you know, certainly, you know, organ perfusion is a, you know,
huge.
It's my passion. It's my love.
Yeah.
It's kind of what got me in here and what really got me in love with it. But seeing the advances with, you know, lung perfusion, mm-hmm. and heart in a box, you know, to see this heart that has been recovered from a donor restarted on a machine and
see it
perfusing blood. It is the most unreal visual that you will ever see. It's just, it's the cool stuff. And seeing that, you know, with these advances, you know, we're able to extend out the life of these organs and get them to people that otherwise may not have had the chance just because of where they live,
right.
Even though it may be a perfect match, just because
but
of where
they
are geographically.
And you can't get to it. Right.
That's cool stuff.
That's
like,
way
you
cool
know, we're
stuff.
We're all in the business of saving lives and doing our part to be mm-hmm. able to, you know, actually see these sorts of things changing.
Yeah.
In our tenure here, you know, it's not like it's the future of, you know, the next generation's going to see this. Like, this is happening today.
Yeah.
It's just, it's neat stuff.
It is really neat stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I, as I said, I feel really privileged to get to be a part of it. I've shared with a couple of people, you know, so what makes you stay? How come you've been here so long? And with any job, so I've been here 26 years and not every day has been rosy, right? And definitely have had some challenges. And when I stop and think for 10 minutes, it's where else would I go?
Yeah.
Right? Like, where could I go and use the knowledge that I have now, the specific skills that I have now, where I'm changing lives, right? And I'm not even clinical. I'm not even on the front lines, but I still feel that.
Right.
I still feel that the work that I'm doing is saving people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And where else would I do that, right?
There is something about that feeling of having your bucket filled, you know, like constantly having just that internal feeling mm-hmm. of I'm doing something cool.
Yeah.
It's like, are there other jobs out there that's not as stressful and I can punch out and mm-hmm. I can truly just disconnect until the next day? Sure.
Yeah.
I can't imagine not doing anything but this, mm-hmm. you know, just because, again, it's so self-satisfying,
yeah.
you know, not only with the work that you're doing, but the people you're doing it with, of mm-hmm. being able to support them. And you're certainly in that group of
yeah.
the amount of support that you lend to everybody else to make sure that we truly live our mission. Like, it's important. It's important.
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about, you know, you've been here for a while, but like, mm-hmm. what does donation mean to you? Like, what is the whole process of organ and tissue donation?
That's a really good question. So what does it mean to me? I've already talked about how amazing it is, and I'm privileged to be a part of all of it. I like very much when we talk about it changing the end of the story. That has real impact and import to me. And I've been at a couple of donor family events, and I remember Dylan Richardson's dad, Dan Richardson, talking at one memory box packing event. Mm. And he said, and it had already been a number of years since Dylan had died, but what he said is, without that, then my son is just dead. Then that's it, right? That's the period. It's over. And for the family member who's left to have that gift, right? Then it makes me think of our name, right? We right. are the gift of hope. That's mm. that in action. There was another family, Barb Dolan shared with me, that there were a couple of donor moms talking at this family memory box packing event. And one of the moms, her son was not able to be a donor. So I guess not a donor mom, but donor in spirit, maybe. There's something happened. So he was not able to be a donor, or she wished that she had said yes. And the other was a donor mom. And the donor mom said to Barb, I actually felt bad talking to her because my son got to be a donor.
Right.
And for her to recognize and feel that she had this gift, right? That she had this extra something that this other mother didn't have. And she kind of felt bad, like she didn't want to brag, right? You know, she didn't want to. Yeah. I thought, oh my gosh, that really is she changing the end of the story. And yeah. and I love that. I love that we take that period away, right? And the family is given this extension, right? Yeah. That it's not over.
Is the end changing the end to a story?
Yeah.
I remember when Kevin said that in one of our town halls, mm-hmm. and he mentioned that, and it just like you, it yeah. stuck in my head.
Yeah.
Because like, that's truly the essence of what we're doing.
Yes.
Something that would have been an absolute tragic loss,
mm-hmm.
we're able to change this. It's still a loss, but people yeah. are able to live on. It's cool.
Yeah.
I know you were talking about the memory making box. I remember my first one I went to, someone invited me to it saying that it was going on. And I didn't know that much about what was involved with it.
Yeah.
I figured we were going to put things in boxes.
Right.
We were going to fold some blankets and yeah. that was it.
Uh-huh.
Little did I know yeah. the amount of crying that I would be doing in here. I had no idea
yeah.
what to expect.
Yeah.
But you know, it's those sorts of events, you know, you can get caught up in, you know, the grind of everything that we're doing,
yeah.
but you go to a memory box mm-hmm. event and you're able to talk. And I remember there were two families that were talking. One was saying that their son, passed away and what became an organ donor from a tragic loss. And, you know, he said his lungs and his liver and his kidneys were able to be donated. And then the next family started talking, and they were a recipient. And
uh-huh.
the husband said, you know, I accepted their lungs. Like, they knew each other.
Wow.
And you could have heard a pin drop. And they obviously yeah. knew each other, and they knew they were going to share the story.
Uh-huh.
But immediately, as soon as he said that, down come
yeah.
the waterworks.
Yeah.
I'm
oh
like,
my gosh,
oh,
yes.
like I'm witnessing the
yeah.
stuff we're actually doing and how it has
yeah.
an impact. It's just, it's cool stuff.
Yeah.
It's just cool stuff.
It is very cool.
Yeah.
Early on, we had a staff meeting every month, and there were few enough of us we could all pack into a room. And we always had, pretty much always, it was someone, a recipient or someone who is waiting talk. And I'm glad that we're getting back to that more because, oh my gosh, those are the stories that, okay, today was really a lousy day, but I'm okay now.
Right, you know, exactly.
This is why I'm here. This is why I'm doing this. But one story that I won't ever forget, and we don't hear of this very often because he was a cornea recipient.
Okay.
So it was one of our donors. So we had that connection, but we didn't often hear. I think that might be the only time I've heard from a cornea recipient. And he just shared the best story. He went blind as an adult. And while he was blind, met his wife. They got married, told a funny story about breaking in a seeing eye dog, and they just got lost, and he had to call his wife and say, I'm somewhere. I don't know where, but you're going to have to come find me. And then he shared about, first, he only accepted one cornea because he wanted someone else to have the gift as well, which just blew me away and spoke volumes about this man, right? And then he talked about when the bandages were removed from his eyes and he saw his wife's face for the first time. I mean, talk about waterworks, right? It just was so beautiful. And it, I remember it now because it was a very moving story, but that was, it kind of helped set the stage for me, right? Because that was probably 25 years ago I heard that story. And that was, oh, that's what I'm part of.
I get it.
Right? That's what this is. You know, to so stories like that are happening for people.
Yeah. I said I always think, you know, every time I, you know, I'm having a rough day or, you know, talking to staff and it's a stressful day and everything's going wrong that you want to go right, and people are feeling discouraged, I keep myself grounded. I'm like, look, I'm having a bad day. Yeah. It has nothing to do with the people that we're currently helping, like, because it is their worst day of their life. And I have nothing to complain about. You know, you're always so blessed. And again, being able to do this part to help others, it just, it drives all of us, I think.
There's one thing. So we were talking about changes. What changes have we seen from, you know, over our years here? And one thing that I've noticed recently, and I think Kevin helped usher in some of this, is the focus on the donor families. Because we were focused on the recipients. And not wrongly, because their lives are being saved, right? And that's why we're here, is so their lives are saved. But I've really appreciated, and kind of what I talked about, what the what we are really doing for those families. And it is a gift, what we are able to offer them. And I have appreciated that a lot. And I've also really appreciated the opportunity to interact with the families more. I remember talking to Carmen. She went to an event, and God bless Carmen, she participates in everything. So she went to an event, and it was with donor families, and she told me later, I had no idea what to say. I felt completely ill-equipped, didn't know how to manage this at all. And I actually brought it to Renata and said, we all need to know what to say. Right? So we need the tools. So there was some conversation around, this is how you can talk to a donor family. And that has been terrific to be armed and know how to talk to a donor family. Then I can really, I can absorb and soak in the wonderfulness, right? You know, of what they were able to get from their loved one's donation. So the, not really a switch, but kind of ramping up our focus on donor families, I have really appreciated it. And I think that's kind of been a shift. And I love that we are taking care of them the way we do.
What, you know, with you being at Gift of Hope for 26 years, you've clearly had conversations with your family about Gift of Hope and what it means to you. But, like, how do you think that translates over to how they understand really how passionate you are about the work that you do?
It's interesting. My, so John, my husband, he always wants to protect me, right? So if I'm having a bad day, he'll say, okay, who do I need to beat up? But he knows how much this matters to me and will say so out loud. He'll say, I know this matters. And Lucy, my daughter, it's kind of interesting. This has been her whole life.
Right.
So this wasn't mom doing anything new. This is the right thing to do. This is, you know, of course I would sign up to be an organ and tissue donor. Of course, this is what it is.
Right.
So it's kind of interesting for me to think about the two of them and it being an introduction, something new with John and Lucy. It's, well, duh.
You know, I didn't know there was an option.
Yeah, exactly. There isn't something else. Yeah.
Right.
And they have both been really supportive. Over the summer, the three of us volunteered at Fiesta del Sol.
Mm-hmm.
And God bless them. Lucy is really very reserved. She's not an out front kind of girl. And somebody was doing some vlog and came by with a microphone and interviewed
her.
Oh, I'm just kind of looking at her from the background. Are you okay? Oh, my gosh. And she was great. She handled herself very well and answered questions about organ donation. And she knew, right? She knew.
Sure.
But that was kind of funny to watch.
It's funny.
Yeah, for sure.
It's
yeah.
funny.
But she definitely, she had all the right answers.
Yeah.
I thought, all right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's been plenty of times where I've had to, you know, miss birthdays or miss holidays
yeah.
or everything because of what's going on with work and because of the call schedule and the amount
yeah.
of phone calls and that we're getting. But, you know, I mean, Evan, my oldest, he was 2 years old when I started.
Wow,
here.
Yeah.
My youngest wasn't born yet, so he
yeah.
grew up in Gift of Hope
mm-hmm.
and all that. And they really didn't know any different. And I remember
yeah.
asking them, you know, this was years ago, I said, like, do you miss it, like, when I'm not able to go? And they're like, no, like, I get it. Like, I know why
wow.
you're not doing it. So it's like you reflect on those moments of,
yeah.
you know, these moments in history with your kids of, like, man, did I do the right thing? You
yeah.
know, internally I know I did the right thing,
mm-hmm.
and I know I needed to do it for myself. But,
sure.
like, how much of an impact and how much of a stress it is for
yeah.
everyone else
mm-hmm.
in the family.
Yeah.
And I think if – you know, you're talking to them and explaining really the magnitude that it's not just
mm-hmm.
what I'm doing to change this, but it's everybody else that we're supporting to help make this
yeah.
change. They're like,
yeah.
yeah, I get it, Dad. We'll see you tomorrow. Like,
yeah.
it's no problem.
Yeah,
so,
that's lovely. That means you've done a really good job.
I mean, yeah, again,
yeah.
it's, you know, it's going back to those roots of working hard, having respect for others,
mm-hmm.
you know, always trying to give to other people. It's
yeah.
important. I think that's everybody in this organization. You know, if all you're thinking about is this is what's best for me, you're not going to last long here.
No,
like, you have to be able to
that's
give
for sure. yeah.
to
yeah.
to make sure that you can live a long, you know, career
yeah.
here for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. With all the faults that there are, and there are faults because we're people, we are mission driven.
For sure.
We totally are.
For sure.
Yeah, and I think everyone would agree with that. Oh,
yeah.
No, well, that's why I'm here.
Right.
Yeah.
It's funny. I was, right before we came in here, I was talking to our new hires, and we have three new organ recovery coordinators and one allocation coordinator.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, like, you know, this is an emotionally, mentally exhausting job.
Yeah.
You know, we're not lifting weights. We're not moving boxes all over the place. I said, but
mm-hmm.
it's mentally and emotionally exhausting. I said, so you have to make sure that you're setting time aside for yourself and for your family to recenter, because
yeah.
if you can't give 100% when you're in here, it's bigger than us. You know,
mm-hmm.
it's bigger than what
mm-hmm.
we're doing. So
yeah.
it's
yeah.
always interesting.
Yeah.
Well, it, thank you, Amy.
Oh, thank you. Oh, my gosh.
I appreciate the time. Certainly
I really felt
know,
honored that you asked me. Like
yeah.
I said, I had heard about it and oh, well, who could I talk to? And I got your email. And went, oh, this is perfect.
when they were saying we needed to get a partner of someone that we can talk to and have
mm-hmm.
conversations with, I'm like,
yeah.
Amy Johnson Back. She is exactly the person that I want, because I can have these
I
sorts of
it.
Conversations and not
yeah.
feel like it needs to be scripted or anything, just having conversations.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for offering.
Thank you, too. I really appreciate it. And thanks for your work.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah.